women's liberation and Afghanistan, women's liberation and Iraq. These are things that we have to be able to learn as lessons, because whenever a war is being planned or executed, they never say, come join our armies, go fight and die in order to enslave people around the world. Let's turn the clock back on history. Give your life, kill or be killed for big oil and Unocal and the banks and Halliburton. Instead, it's always as though the Pentagon and all the armies it drags in its tow are the great forces of liberation, just a Meals on Wheels, a humanitarian effort. Today in the U.S., there's a domestic war going on as well. And those who saw the aftermath of Katrina know that this was a shooting war. It was a shooting war, a racist war, which has created yet another diaspora in the Deep South of African Americans and also of undocumented Latino workers whose names are just not there. Now, when they talk about rebuilding this city, they're talking about rebuilding it for rich whites, not for the people who live there. Today, in the U.S., universities, in many, more than 50% of some classes are being taught by people who have no benefits. Many people are working temp jobs, two or three, no health care. Every social and economic issue that we face in the U.S. today is tied to this war. Women's rights, who will we turn to? The Pentagon, where we've just learned that there's been a systematic hiding of the fact that women GIs at night in 120 degree heat were not drinking water, died of dehydration because they feared being raped, going to the latrines, and the Pentagon higher-ups have covered this up. Money for breast cancer research, money for AIDS treatment, youth, jobs. Youth are being told, we've got a job for you. You just sign here. You can start right away. Social services, daycare, all of it's tied to the war. And lesbian, gay, bi rights, trans rights, the military, the biggest employer in the U.S., this public employer, you know, this equal opportunity employer, right? Don't ask, don't tell. They're carrying out a war of terror against their own ranks as well, in which soldiers are taught to bayonet the enemy using anti-gay epithets, anti-trans epithets, anti-woman slurs. And you know, during the first Gulf War, they lifted, the generals and admirals lifted the don't ask, don't tell. It was okay to be a lesbian, gay, bi, or trans GI until the invasion was over, and then they were all summarily discharged without any benefits. Those who are going over there and dying, we're being told in the U.S., you have to support them now. You have to support their mission. You say, no, that's your mission. The only people who support the troops are the ones, those of us who are saying, bring them home now. And we support the Iraqi right to resist being occupied and bombed and their infrastructure being dismantled and their resources being stolen. It is the resistance of the Iraqi people that is keeping all that wealth from being sucked out and is fighting against this huge, mega powerful army and cannot be broken by the shock and awe. And speaking of shock and awe, I want to stand in solidarity tonight, shoulder to shoulder with my Muslim sisters and brothers against this attack on Islam. This is not just a cartoon. That's a degrading of the issue of what this is really about. The so-called war on terror, the occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, the menacing of Iran and Syria, the use of sex and gender humiliation and rape against prisoners in Abu Ghraib, the military interrogators reportedly flushing the Quran down the toilet in front of Muslim prisoners, the roundup of Arab and Muslim and South Asian people in the U.S., the mass disappearance. I stand with Muslim people from the Middle East to Asia to Africa to North America to say, this is part of the racist salvos, the racist propaganda to try to justify the war on terror. And we need to have unity with Muslim people to stop this from being, to stop this from dividing our movements. For those of you who will be here on March 11th, and I'm sorry I won't be, May 11th, and I won't be. I'll leave this leaflet here for this gender, race, Islam, and the war on terror meeting that's going to be held here. As we work towards coalition, I also hope that we can revitalize the left wing of women's liberation. We need to revive red feminism. Internationally known feminist theorist Chandra Talpati Mohanty, 2 decades ago, wrote a classic essay entitled Under Western Eyes, in which she challenged Western feminism to deepen its analysis of anti-colonialism, of anti-imperialism. And when she revisited this essay in her most recent book, Feminism Without Borders, she challenged Western feminism to deepen its anti-capitalist struggle. But to do so in the U.S., the citadel of anti-communism, means that the movement has to be able to withstand red baiting. And that's the last of these weapons I'd like to talk about tonight. I remember when I went to Faneuil Hall recently, I was walking around the way I did tonight nervously before a talk, and I saw a little plaque, and it said, Frederick Douglass spoke here, gave a very controversial speech. Now, what do you think was so controversial about that speech? He talked about abolishing slavery. Now, slavery is not the dominant social economic system. So now everybody, except maybe, I don't know, John Ashcroft or somebody, is against slavery, at least lip service. But the idea that all of what we have created through our labor historically, socially, should belong to a couple of people, a handful of families like the Bill Gates, to talk about abolishing that. Now that's too controversial. That you can't even raise the word capitalism in the U.S. without all the air getting sucked out of the room. So, I don't think I like where this is going. It's the end of history, we're told. This is it. This is it. This terrible gap between wealth and poverty, where so many of the world's people are living on less than a dollar a day while 200 families own the lion's share. This is it. This is the highest form of social and economic organization to which we should aspire. But it's meant to keep us from even asking, is it possible that those of us who do the work of the world every day collectively and are never asked how it should be run, could in fact take it over and run it to meet human needs, and not just human needs, but human wants and desires, not just to give people equally, because equal isn't equal, but to provide to people according to their need and to take and enrich society from people's abilities? Well, that's just too controversial. That's just too subversive. Now, there are some to the right of revolutionaries in the movement who would be not that unhappy if communists and other revolutionaries got driven out of the movement because they're political opponents. And they think, well, I wouldn't mind. They're kind of a thorn in the side. You know, maybe if the establishment just got rid of them, then we'd be the leaders. But that's not how it works. Once you sit back, even if you're anti-communist, and let people who are communist or even perceived to be get red-baited, then you become the left. And every time you ask for a quarter, you're going to get, what's the matter with you? Are you a communist? And then you'll get pushed back. The movement will be dismantled. A healthy, vibrant, dynamic movement has a strong left wing. History today is searching for the Sojourner Truths and the Harriet Tubmans, the Chang Chings and the Madame Bins and the Rosa Luxemburgs, those who saw economic repressive systems that claimed to last forever, and yet they had the vision to be able to see what was possible and what had to be fought for, even when there weren't mass movements in the streets. Today, there is a new leadership of revolutionary women around the world, from the takeover of the oil facilities by women in Nigeria, to the Bolivian women who are part of the, to the Venezuelan women who are part of the Bolivian revolution, the indigenous women and other women who are organizing as grassroots. We get told, just wait till the next election if you want change, or go court a politician. Have you lobbied lately? That's the way to change things. Work within the system. Do it incrementally. And you know, if you don't know, for example, what happened in the 1950s to lift up that moderate demand of the homophile movement, then it could make it seem in a reactionary period that that's the way forward. It's just hat in hand, asking politely, give a yard, get an inch. But the fact is, as Frederick Douglass said, that power concedes nothing without a struggle. Never has, never will. They tell us wait for a great white man or a great white woman on a big white horse, and they'll come and change everything and save the day. But it's meant to keep us from the real truth that was summed up so succinctly and so eloquently by the late black poet June Jordan. She wrote, "We are the ones we have been waiting for." Thank you.